You're listening to the Purdue Basketball Beat with Michael, Andy, and Anish, a part of the Boiled Sports Podcast Network.
Hello, and welcome to episode 3 of the Purdue Basketball Beat. I'm Michael with Anish and Andy. How are you guys doing?
Hi.
And actually, symbolic, it's not only the third episode, but it took us 3 takes to get this episode.
That's right. This is number 3. This is number 3.
Only 3 takes. We're doing really good. I'm very proud of you guys.
That's true. I mean, we haven't had to restart yet, so we'll worry about that later.
So speaking of 3, this is a good segue, if you notice. we've had 3 games under our belt, I think, since our last podcast. So I think we should maybe talk a little bit about kind of where we stand right now.
Sure.
Yeah, and as we were talking a little bit before this started, the Grambling Skate game was by far the worst.
Oh, it was. I mean, like, the first half was fun, but, like, I guess. But the second half, just the refs got a little too trigger happy. And I think the only fun part of the second half was that Basil Smotherman dunk.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I watched only pieces of the second half. Like,
yeah, it was brutal.
I went and did other stuff. It's Purdue won by 52. I mean, really.
Hey, the spread was 38.5. So that's not bad. That's not bad.
That's not bad. You can make some money on that.
Okay, wait. Can we take a second here for just 1 second? And on behalf of all Purdue fans, I feel like we have the voice to do that. Can we just complain for a few minutes about the whole Big Ten system, the Big Ten network system thing?
Oh, it's my favorite thing to complain about.
Yeah, let's go. Go ahead.
It's awful. I would love for someone to name another network that you pay for access as part of your cable bill, and then to get other content, you have to pay more money to get access to that. It would be like HBO saying, hey, you pay us as part of your cable bill and you can watch the first 12 episodes of Game of Thrones, but the season finale will cost you $10.
No, you know what? And I'll take that. I feel the same way, but to be honest, I'll pay, okay? I'll pay. I'm a sucker. I'll pay to watch him. But the quality, that's really what I feel is insulting. Because if we're going to pay for something, you know, we have certain expectations. And I understand it's a student production and they're learning. But is there any type of vetting process? It's bad.
I really don't mind them.
Really?
I think they're getting. I think they're getting better. And the worst thing for me wasn't the announcers. It happened a couple times these first 3 games, but it happened a lot more in the past where, like, the game would be going on and the camera would be, like, pointed
that's the
someplace
worst part. The camera work. Like, see, I mean, you know, listening to student broadcasts of, like, high school games or something like that, that doesn't bother me. Like, these guys are fine. But just the camera work is, like, the camera work is worse than high school.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. And the only thing I had to laugh about with the announcers was the sideline announcer who was a little too casual with Matt.
Hey,
Painter.
Matt, yeah. So Matt.
Hey, Matt, what's up, man? And like, I expected her to start, like, teasing him about something. It's like, man, your hair sure is gray. Isn't it?
Like, her mic was turned up so loud. It was unreasonable. I don't know.
How
okay.
Were the levels, though? Were the levels?
The levels were a little high. All right. The levels were a little high. I'm a levels expert. The levels were a little high. So what do you, are you guys watching it? I mean, you both pay. We all 3 of us pay for this because we're all idiots.
I always joke around that there's the annual day where my wife sees their charge on their credit card statement, and I have to come up with some excuse. But really, I'm out of excuses.
Worse. There could be worse charges. All right.
Yeah. Well, actually, it's nice because they mask it with some weird. I had to look it up on Google to figure out what it was. She's like, "What is this?" And, I looked it up. Like, oh,
Big Ten Network. I swear to God.
$9.99 at the strip club. So are you guys watching it on the computer?
I am.
Okay. How about you, Mike?
Yeah, I
all
am
right.
too.
So I think that I mean, like, you guys watch the ESPN3 or the Watch ESPN, whatever it's called now. That client, I think that their interface, I was saying this last week on Twitter, I think that the Big Ten Network's interface is a lot better. But
I agree.
And it's easier to rewind. Like I really, you know, for GIF's sake and recording video's sake, I like being able to rewind 10 seconds and, you know, whatever. But it's just like most of the time during live viewings, it either cuts in or cuts out, or like the commercial breaks come in too early, or I don't know. It's just like really easy stuff that if you put even an ounce of pride into your work, it'd be so easy to fix these kind of things.
And the delay is like, it's like 30 seconds behind.
Yeah, it is.
It renders Twitter almost useless in some degrees, because if you're watching it and you start tweeting about a play that happened, you know, three plays before.
It's not like anybody was tweeting about the Grambling State game, but the game, the earlier games,
I probably tweeted about 100 times. It was too much. I probably lost about 10 followers to that thing.
How many tweets do you have, Mike?
I have
a billion.
I have a billion tweets. No, I think I have close to 15,000 tweets.
I feel like I thought I spammed a little bit too much.
I feel sorry for all. I think I have something like 1,500 followers. So I've got
humble break.
So, well, no, that's not a ton, but Andy's got like
a billion, yeah, because he stole billion. The good Twitter handle.
Because you stole the good
good Twitter handle.
No, I paid for most of them though. It's the only good way.
But like, I must annoy the crap out of all of them, because then it's just terrible. I've got a problem.
Anyways, I'm glad that I'm sure most people didn't tune in to hear us talk.
Check
about
me out
Twitter.
At the railroad. Yeah.
Honestly, I have no reason. I don't know why.
We'll be live tweeting the show.
And then we'll have an after show. Yeah.
No,
To the games.
Okay. Should we go chronologically? Let's start with game one, or you want to just kind of lump them all three together and put get your takeaways. What do you think, Andy?
I think we should lump them all together, because I think collectively we don't know anything about the team yet. So I don't think either specific game is going to tell us a whole lot.
Yeah, I mean, except for the fact that Vince Edwards is being drafted first overall. I mean, okay. I'm glad he took it easy against Ken Pomeroy's 351st dead last ranked team, Grambling State. He didn't have a big game, but you know, showing pity, right?
No, you know, if you remember Hummel, like, and I'm sorry, I think it's fair to compare that role. I mean, he's not the player; it's different, but he plays that role and. He's playing it really well, where he does a lot of things and you don't even realize how much he's doing until you look at the box score and realize, you know, he had 2 steals, 3 assists, 6 rebounds. I mean, I think even when it seems like he's not doing much, he's really impacting the game.
So I don't think the Hummel, I mean, like, obviously he's not as good as Robbie was his senior year, but, or, you know, or that whatever junior year before Minnesota, but it's the role that he carved in Coach Painter's system, right? It's that facilitating from the top of the key or from the, you know, from the elbow, being able to, you know, cut in the lane when the big, whether it's Juwan Johnson or AJ Hammonds, has the ball, is double teamed and kicks to the cutter, float out for 3-pointers occasionally, as we saw him do against IUPUI and against in the first game, Samford. It's a very versatile role, and I think he's perfect for it.
I think the one thing that Hummel always had that is still developing with Vince Edwards is the 3-point shot. Now, I mean, I know that Vince can step out and hit it, but it's not reliable to the point that it was pretty early on in Hummel's career. But other than that, I think that comparison is pretty apt, and I think it's really perfect for the type of offense that Matt Painter likes to run.
And honestly, and you can debate me on this, but I think that one thing I think that Vince does a little bit better early is he's just really savvy in the lane. And I mean, he's got great vision, you know, down low, and he can kick it out or just center it. But he's also can finish. And I think after the last couple of teams we've had, just having someone that can finish he actually has a lot more athleticism than I thought he would, you know, seeing his high school highlights.
Yeah, I mean, watching his high school highlights, I don't know if he had an injury that he was like slowly coming back from his senior year or something like that. But he looked very much more a finesse player, like kind of a, you know, a fundamental whatever, you know, back to the basket or like do it, you know, good footwork, those kind of things rather than his athleticism. Yeah, I totally agree. That's somewhere that he's kind of surprised me.
So as a whole, you know, looking at the team, one of the things that I think it kind of dawned on me, I guess, compared to last year's team is we just have several people that can score a lot of points in a small period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And then last year, I know things just kind of stalled, and you looked at the team that was out there and you said, you know, they would just, you know, all jam in the lane, and you'd say, who is really could score? I mean, besides Kendall Stevens, there was no one that could score, you know, a jump shot or you know, make something happen in the lane. And this team, you look at the roster, I mean, I think there's, you know, it's about 10 people, I think, that can really create.
Yeah, so I mean, like, and I think the key right there was Octius, honestly. I think he's the perfect he's not a pure point guard. He's a combo guard, but he has that beautiful, like, little probing move in the lane. He doesn't try to, I think, Michael, you said this on Twitter, he doesn't try to do too much, you know, like, you know, the last probably two or three point guards. Actually, if you look at what Lewis Jackson tried to do early in his career, he's not overextending himself. He's not putting himself in positions where he won't succeed. It's like, you know, that's experience. And I don't know, at times I forget he's a senior, but, you know, it's really, we're really lucky to have him. There were mixed responses that people gave when they heard that Octius was coming. A lot of it was positive, but there were some people who were like, you know, very down on Octius's game, thought he was a little too selfish, thought he was a high volume shooter instead of a, you know, more efficient scorer. I don't know. I think he's fit in perfectly and been that missing piece.
I think a lot of those same criticisms were leveled at Sterling Carter last year, because he came from a program where he had to produce all of the offense. And then the question was, well, this Purdue team already has enough sort of ball hogs. How is this going to come in? It took Carter longer than it's taken Octius.
Oh,
but
yeah,
when you've been around enough, both of those players have been able to recognize their role on the team and play to their strengths as it benefits the team rather than just gunning it as soon as they get within range. I've been really impressed by Octius's ability to pass up a good shot in favor of a better look for a teammate. And that's really been something that's very important, and it's been nice to see.
And I think he also brings an element that this team really lacks. And I know that he's undersized, but he kind of has a game that kind of, I guess elements of his game is kind of like an athletic wing, and he is an athlete. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, when he's around the rim and he's got a head of steam, he can throw it down.
But I really do think, I mean, he's long for a point guard and undersized for a wing, but I really do think he's an undersized wing that happens to be able to handle the ball. And it, you know, defensively, he's got, you know, better intensity than Carter had. And I was a big fan of Sterling Carter. And that IU game is beautiful. But I, you know, Octius has already made a bigger impact. He's stepped right into the starting role. Bryson Scott was clearly not ready for a starting role, even though he has improved. But I don't know if he'll ever be a point guard, honestly.
Well, let's address Bryson, just because I know we talked a little bit about him last week, but there's still kind of a level of polarization I think he has among Purdue fans.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So last year it was kind of the pro and anti Ronnie Johnson camp, right? So it was, if you were pro Ronnie Johnson, you thought, and this was definitely me, you thought that Bryson got most of his stat line in garbage time. Either we were getting blown out. Actually, most of the time we were getting blown out, and we just put him in against scrubs, and he would pad his stat line. And I thought that the people who are calling for him to start over Ronnie Johnson and things like that, I don't know. I didn't think he had the skills for it. And I think we do see a little bit of growth in his game this year, but I think, you know, it's pretty clear he's not a point guard, and I don't know if he can ever. I don't know if he can get there. I don't know.
I think he's trying. I mean, I'm seeing parts of his game that tell me that this is a guy who's really working on being a point guard or being a distributor. And sometimes it's actually to his detriment. There was a point in the game where he got in the lane and probably should have gone up for a shot, but then tried to shovel pass to someone who was like a foot away from him. And it was really just kind of an awkward play. But, you know, when I see stuff like that, it's like, okay, that didn't work out. But that shows me a guy who recognizes that he has to get the ball to other people if he doesn't have, like, a good shot. And I think it's going to take him a while to find the balance between scoring and distributing.
I think it goes against every instinct of his body to have to pass that up. So anytime he does pass, you can – it just makes it abundantly clear that he's trying. But here's the thing, and he's clearly got a knack for driving and drawing a foul, but he's got to make his free throws. I mean, if he's not making free throws, then it just turns those into empty possessions, and then it becomes really frustrating to watch.
So he was 4 of 6, against Grambling State. He also had 3 steals and had the same number of assists as Octius. So, you know, I think if he comes in as in a reserve role, maybe share some time on the court with Thompson or Octius, I think Purdue needs him to play well to win. I don't think he can be left out of the rotation. So,
yeah,
so I'm willing to give him 4 years to develop as a player.
Good thing, because that's how many years of eligibility he has. No, just,
exactly.
I think first of all, I do think, I mean, like his free throw shooting this year has dropped to 62, you know, percent over the first 2 games, which even though it's a small sample, it's like the whole premise of him being an offensive weapon is built around the fact that he's going to drive to the rim. And the only way people can stop him is by fouling him. And so if he can't make his free throws, he turns into James Harden, who is both awful to watch and can't put points on the board. But
at least he can play defense better.
See, that's where I was getting to, is that his defensive intensity is something that I don't think we can take for granted. Like, he can shut point guards down, I think. Like, he has that ability.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I there's a role for him.
Mm-hmm. And earlier you were talking about the P.J. Thompson, Bryson Scott lineups. If you notice, first of all, we're playing P.J. Thompson a ton off the ball. He's getting a lot of minutes alongside Bryson and alongside Octius. But usually in the lineups with Bryson and P.J., the person bringing up the ball is Vince Edwards. And we're really utilizing him in that point forward role. He had that a lot during the IUPUI game when he was on all game. And, you know, Vince had the ball in his hands. He was starting plays. He was starting sets. But it surprised me how much we're using P.J. Thompson off the ball and how much he's thriving. He's doing really well in that role.
Yeah, and his defense has been really surprising too. We talked a little bit about this during the last episode, but he's played really good hounding defense. I think Purdue had forced, I think it was either four, was it 4 shot clock violations? I don't know.
It was 3 in the first like 8 minutes or something like that. It was great.
And a lot of that was due to the guards. I mean, Grambling State, again, it's the number 351st team, but they couldn't get the ball past the 3-point line. And so our defense is anchored by some really good shot blockers in the paint. But I think our guards are showing that they can apply some pressure too, and that's very good to see.
And you know, even with Dakota Mathias, I think a lot of people wanted to label him as a defensive liability. And I don't have a good argument against that, but he does seem to be pretty savvy. I don't think he's got the athleticism to match up with some of the quicker guards, but I think he's smart enough that he knows how to take the correct angles. And I've seen him wreak some havoc. Havoc there in the lane.
So enough about these boring games against teams in the 300s. I am convinced that we really haven't learned a whole lot about the team yet, other than the fact that they can beat the crap out of some terrible teams.
We can say that they can run an offense now. And that's something that we haven't seen in a couple of years.
That's true. But I think we're going to get a good idea, or at least a sense of how the season is going to go after the Maui Invite, which starts on the 24th against Kansas State.
Mm-hmm. That'll be definitely more challenging than IPY. That's the problem, right? We've looked great. We've had a margin of victory that is pretty much expected over these first three games against, you know, KenPom 300 ranked opponents. But it's just like, I don't know if it's because we're up by 40 points, but the turnovers and the you know, unforced mistakes are still there. Mm-hmm. And against a good team, you know, Kansas State isn't great, but I think they're good enough to take advantage of. Yeah, how many turnovers do we have tonight? I mean, I thought it was borderline ridiculous, but you can't complain about that too much because we won by 40, 50 points.
Right.
But I don't know, that carelessness with the ball, or sometimes overpassing and, you know, into you know, tough situations. I don't know. It's something I'm worried about.
And I think that's interesting because that is a kind of a byproduct of this new unselfish offense. Some of the passes are just bad. I mean, they're taking up wide open shots for a, you know, seemingly closer shot, but usually it's crowded in the lane, and I think it'd just be you get more value just shooting it than risking a turnover.
Mm-hmm. Kansas State is capable of taking advantage of those and forcing some more turnovers as well. They haven't really been tested yet. Either they played UMKC, the Kangaroos,
sure,
and Southern Utah only beat Southern, or I'm sorry, they only beat UMKC by 10, but you don't really know.
Well, and UMKC beat Mizzou, so you know, they were
by the transference. Yeah.
The transitive property, is that what you're looking for?
Well, no, I'm just saying that Kansas, it was a close game, but they played a pretty good team.
Yeah.
They might have been a decent test.
And so against Kansas State, after, you know, the winner of Purdue Kansas State plays Missouri Arizona. So Arizona. Mm-hmm. Expectations, what are we thinking here?
I think Purdue has a real shot to beat Kansas State, but it's going to have to use – Purdue will have to use their size, I think. Kansas State's leading scorer is Thomas Gibson, who is a big guy, kind of. He's 6'7", which isn't too big, but he's 265 pounds. He's been averaging 19-8 through two games, so that's going to be a challenge for
– What year is he?
He's a senior.
That's right. I thought he was a senior, yeah. I mean, that's going to be a test. And I think KenPom has him ranked just below us. Right? I mean, as of, you know, before this game, we were both ranked in the, you know, low 30s. I think we have the edge, but that might be the, you know, Purdue homer in me talking.
They don't rebound particularly mm-hmm. well, but they do shoot pretty well. And they're an experienced team. And Bruce Weber is a decent coach, mm-hmm. so I think it'll be an apt challenge. So, but yeah, Arizona.
It'll be a good game. I mean, if they could keep it competitive,
it'll be a cool test. I mean, like it'll be, if we look good against Kansas State, you know, I know we're giving Arizona the game against Missouri, but I think Missouri's in a little bit of shambles and Arizona is a national title contender. So I feel like it's okay that we're doing that. But if Purdue can beat Kansas State, you know, just competing against a talented team like Arizona is a huge step.
Yeah. You want to come out. I think you want to win. I don't think you want to at least come out of Maui with a win.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
And it would be best if you could get two wins, right? And
I I mean, like, people might hear us talk, and I'm sure Dad will send me a text tomorrow saying, or whenever this air, or whenever we post this, about how great it sounds that, what, you know, if we just compete against Arizona. But, like, Arizona looks unbelievable. So, you know, temper your expectations a bit, because we're not top 25, let alone top 3. Right. So yeah, I think 1.5, you know, one victory and a moral victory is plenty.
Right. And then hopefully a win in the consolation, or in the loser bracket.
Yeah.
So. At some point. So yeah, I think it's unreasonable to expect much against a team like Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of hate saying that, but it's the truth. You got to be a little realistic.
But yeah, the positive side is we get to see how this team behaves when they're tested, and mm-hmm. we'll know, you know, after a week, we'll know a lot about the team. And you know, I think that's what you got to go from there. We really have no baseline against normal competition, and I think at least we'll be able to develop better expectations for how they might do in the Big Ten, or you know, what the road to the tournament might actually look like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are you guys surprised, just real quick, if that not many people have that high of expectations for Purdue? You know, in like a lot of these preseason things, it's, you know, 12th in the conference, anywhere from 10th to 12th in the conference.
I'm not surprised in the least.
It's a safe guess too. I mean
there's practically half of the roster is new. Purdue lost its leading scorer and its starting point guard. AJ Hammonds has been, by all accounts, inconsistent. I mean, if you had to make the case to a national audience, or even to just a Big Ten audience, that Purdue was going to finish in the top half of the Big Ten this season, What's your argument and make it plausible?
Well, and another, I mean, and they look at the roster and they look at the fact that there's, you know, 4 freshmen that are going to be contributing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that maybe we have those rose-colored glasses, and but it's, you know, there's going to be some bumps in the road, and I take offense with Bob Kravitz. because
in his life,
oh my gosh, no, he slighted Purdue big time on the radio and in print, and he should have at least be doing the due diligence. I don't expect you know, Billises of the world to pay attention to the details, to understand who, like, how, what this team looks like right now, but you know, when you're, I think some of the local guys should at least take the time and kind of take a closer look, because I think that's when you really kind of see that Purdue's.
I mean, Kravitz is a hack who enjoys being a hack. I mean, he's settled into this role where he's been doing it long enough where I don't think he feels like he has to put any effort into anything anymore. I mean, even his IU stuff.
He's reached peak Rick Riley.
He is Indiana's Rick Riley, because even his IU stuff is crap. I mean, like, he doesn't even put any effort into the team he likes. Like, why would he put any effort into Purdue? I mean, he comes out from his rock to write about Purdue twice a year, once about the basketball team, once about the football team, and both times about how much we suck. And then he goes back to talking about racing and IU basketball. So, I don't give him.
Not good that his competition is Greg Doyle now.
Yeah, Greg Doyle is going to eat his lunch, and it's not even going to be close.
I don't know. He's already done some idea that Coach Katie thing was amazing.
That was awesome.
I could read that for days.
I emailed Greg Doyle and I got a response. I told him I enjoyed it, and he said the athletic department gave him a bunch of ideas for articles, and that was one of them that came up.
He's a good guy. I mean, like, so too often he would play the blowhard role on CBSSports.com. I actually read him a lot. I read CBSSports.com a lot. I think a lot of their opinion pieces and analytical stuff is really good. But Doyle would often do the blowhard just for a blowhard sake type thing. But I mean, if you're into long form stuff, like, he had an article this summer over about an Indiana high school basketball program saving the town, and how mm-hmm. town, like, you know, typical Indiana small town rallies around his basketball team, whatever. And it was phenomenal. And
did you read the article about the Amish? Was it like a horseback race? Some of those races, horse races, but he was a jockey.
No, I didn't.
Ah, it was a good article.
So he's good. Props to him. Read him. The IU star is getting a little better. but it, so back to the game. If we do face Arizona, it reminds me to a little extent, because they're not as talented. Last year's team wasn't as talented, but the Oklahoma State game, where we played them in Florida. I forgot we played some tournament that we played down there, but you know, we lost by 10. It wasn't that bad. Like we were hanging in there for about, you know, 32 minutes
before the technicals, right?
I mean, yeah, before the Jay Simpson technicals, and before Marcus Smart just, oh no, that was the first half. Marcus Smart just decided to scorch the earth and, you know, be Marcus Smart. But we were looking good and we were undefeated going to that game. We were 5-0, and then we lost that game, and then the next game was the Eastern Michigan the Washington State game. And you know, that loss, and that's where, you know, as stupid as it was, that's kind of where we saw the limitations of this team, and things started to fracture, and we started to hear, you know, rumors and things like that. You know, it's, as much as I want to say, as much as I want to disagree with you guys and think that we have seen a lot, we have seen this team have an identity and things like that, a loss, again, you know, rallying from a loss is a huge thing, and seeing how this team does that is a pretty big deal.
Yeah, no, that's a great point and a great analogy. I mean, you could look at last season after the Washington State game, and knowing what happened the rest of the season, it would all sort of make sense.
Yep.
Right. Overperform, but fall short against a good team, and then lay an absolute egg against a terrible team. And that was a pattern that would repeat itself all season before, of course, Purdue ended up losing 7 straight.
Yep.
To close the season.
Yeah, it was brutal, and that's just how they responded from that loss. And I think the players, you know, the personalities are different, and I think we'll see a better, even if we lose to Kansas State, I think we'll see people rally a little better. And you know, I don't know. I'm interested. I'm interested to see everything, you know, win or lose.
So, okay. So each of you, what is your metric for success in Maui?
I just want 2 wins. I'd be happy with 2 wins.
2 wins. Anish?
One and decent against Arizona. Like give me 1 competitive half against Arizona.
What if they lose to Kansas State and beat Missouri and then lose the 3rd game? Is that still success?
Yeah, sure. I mean, if we look good doing it, you know, if we play someone like Pittsburgh and you know, it's a pretty decent Pittsburgh team, or, you know, BYU or San Diego State team. Yeah, sure. If we, 2 wins on the loser bracket side, or, and, you know, 1 and 1 on the winner's bracket. I think that's fine. Even if we lose in the consolation game, that's okay. Just be resilient after a loss is what I want to see.
Yeah, I think I'm the same. 1 win in the winner's bracket or 2 in the losers, and I think I'm good. So, well, that about wraps it for episode 3 of the Purdue Basketball Beat. Thanks, everybody, for listening.